Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott review Rotorua Estate Sparkling Wine from California. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault.
Welcome, everybody, to the Wine Vault. It's I, Rob the Wine Guy. Tonight is an exciting night. We have an exceptional episode with an award-winning wine. And a wine that we don't normally, a type of wine we don't normally drink here on the Wine Vault. I think we've only done it one other time. And it wasn't this kind of stuff. And there's so many of these out there that we should be drinking, but we just never get to it. And what are we talking about?
Is it a secret?
Could it be Cabernet? Could it be Chardonnay? Could it be Zinfandel? Well, no, it wouldn't be. It's actually a sparkling wine. A sparkling wine from California, no less. And you might say, Rob, don't you mean champagne? And I don't mean champagne because champagne refers to only sparklers made within champagne. Outside of that, we got to go with sparkling wine.
But the licensee's champagne in his glass.
It is champagne.
This is champagne glass.
It is champagne. Let's call it champagne.
Champagne.
You know what's funny? They've never come up with a better name than sparkling wine. That's what they call it in California. It's called sparkling wine. I mean, think of a better name. Think of something. We'll call it champagne. There we go.
Let's be frank, or let's be French. Champagne's a better name than sparkling wine.
It would be much better.
Technically, you can't call it that because it's not. From the region.
Yes. Nevertheless, though, folks.
Go ahead and break it down. Tell them about the region.
The beauty part about what?
Why it's not champagne.
Because it's not from Champagne.
There you go.
Yes. That's in France. Champagne is in France. Anyway, this, however, does have French roots because it is produced by a French champagne maker. The wine in question is Rotorua's Estate Brut. Rotorua is a very, very famous champagne house. It's the ones you might think of are Moët. You've seen that. Perhaps Pierre Jouët, Veuve Clicquot, Bollinger, Charles Heidsieck. Rotorua is one of those. Rotorua makes something you might have heard of called Cristal.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Perhaps. Yeah. Probably not paid for it and drank it, but
I've had it. It's lovely. That's who they are. One of the top producers that exist, really. I mean, let's be honest. One of the best champagne producers in existence, in my opinion. Although, everybody's opinion. I mean, there's some that are as good, but I mean, it's one of the top.
What'd you give for this bottle?
I paid $18.99, but it was on closeout special at Meijer. Once again, people don't know what it is. They don't buy it. But it's normally about $25.
Okay.
Which is exciting. So when we come back, folks, we're going to give you some more information, and then we're going to get into this wine here on the Wine Vault.
Unlicensed taxi driver here. When I'm out on the road, mayhem is everywhere. Mayhem doesn't care, but your local Allstate insurance agent, Craig Walters, does care. Are you in good hands? Are you in the good hands of Craig Walters Insurance Agency?
And if you're not, folks, please give Craig a call. His number is 740-862-4585. You can also meet him at his office at 107 North Main Street, Baltimore, Ohio. For auto, home, or life, give Craig a call. And we're back, folks. So, the Rotorua Estate Brut.
It's non-vintage.
It's non-vintage.
And that's nothing to be scared of in any way, shape, or form.
But it is a specific appellation, being Anderson Valley, which is part of Medicino. Not Medicino.
Medicino!
No, just Medicino. And Anderson Valley is kind of cool because it's one of these little sub-areas that makes only good wine.
And technically it's a sub-AVA.
Most generally they're all sub. It's a sub-AVA of Medicino. And primarily it's Pinot and Chardonnay. There's some Syrah and some Riesling, things like that. But for the most part, it's Pinot and Chard. And This happens to be 60% Chardonnay and 40% Pinot Noir, I believe.
Huh.
Now, Pinot Noir, you might say, Rob, that's a red grape. And you'd be correct to say that. However, there's one little thing about it. If harvested young, it doesn't take on the red pigment as much. And so you are going to have a lighter colored wine. Pinot Meunier has more Pinot in it. Rosé, why is Rosé there? Pinot.
Right.
So Pinot is one of the elements of Champagne. Anderson Valley, this particularly 80,000 cases of this.
Hello.
Yes.
That's not small production at all.
No, and let's go through some of the awards. First of all, a 90 from the Decanter. 91 from Connoisseur Guide. 92 from Wine and Spirits. Wilfred Wong gave it 92 points. Wine Enthusiast gave it 92 points. And the Wine Speculator gave it 92 points. And they had it number 25 in their top 100 of all wines in the world for 2017.
Huh.
Beyond that, let's see. Stacey Briscoe, San Francisco Chronicle, double. Let's see.
Shout out, Briscoe Bites.
Double gold winner.
Hello.
Yes. And past vintages have all been up in there, too. This is a ridiculously celebrated.
It's fucking decorated.
Now, this is the thing, though. It's not just this. A lot of California sparklers are decorated like this, whether it be from Gloria Ferrara, Schramsberg, Iron Horse, Jay. I mean, it goes on and on. There are Chandon.
Is it just a good time? Similar to, you know, right now we're in a glory no. 3-4 years of
California
Zinfandels.
California makes great sparklers. Obviously, France makes excellent, wonderful, world-class champagne. But California is not bad either. And you're not paying a ton for it. Say you pay $20. And I think we've had a cava on before, which is fine. And your Spanish cavas for around 10. That's where you're 10, yeah. You're in Spain.
Yeah.
Double your money, you're getting good wine. I mean, good wine.
Really good.
Really good.
If they're
good
all
wine.
Decorated, then what? How can you go wrong?
You can't. Now, this is what's really cool about Roederer. They also, in California, have a vintage champagne.
A vintage line.
And it's called La Hermitage. And currently, they're on the 2011. And the thing about La Hermitage, it comes in under 50. And it rivals any French champagne that exists.
Really?
The 11 vintage. Wilfred Wong gave it a 95. The Enthusiast gave it a 95. And Spectator gave it a 93. But it's not produced every year. Only in the best years.
Huh. Well.
09. Wilfred Wong, 96. Spectator, 92. Wine and Spirits, 90. The before that, 95, 93, 90. Then 98, 97, 93, 91. That was for the 2006 vintage. 05 was a little slack, and it was 292s. 94, and by the way, the 98 was from Wilfred Wong. He must really like this. 2004, Wine Enthusiast, 97, 93, 92. Then it got a 96, 94. I mean, it's all...
Yeah, 45 bucks.
Yeah.
The 2009 on wine.com, as we speak, 45 bucks.
It was easier to find in the past. Now you probably have to go that route. But if you want something grand for New Year's, or if you really enjoy champagne or sparklers, you need to try that. They know what they're doing. But this wine in and of itself, the bubbles are nice, big. Just the effervescence is gorgeous.
An explosion. Just beautiful.
Slightly frothy.
Yeah, gorgeous. The bubbles are, it's almost like a head of a light beer.
It won't stop.
It just was, won't you stop, won't you stop, won't you stop?
Let's see, what do they say here? The Spectator calls it a voluptuous and expressive sparkler with floral red apple, brioche, and cinnamon spice aromas and rich, vibrant flavors that finish on a luxurious note.
The color, it's just on the verge of straw.
Just on the
it's
verge.
It's not quite there. It's pale, but it's a darker pale. It's almost like a color of beer.
Slightly. A very light beer.
A very light beer.
Yes. I don't think Roeder would like us saying that.
I know they wouldn't.
We'll say Kronenbourg 1664. How's that?
Any of the crappy, low-calorie, lighter beers, Miller 64, Bud Select 55, that really light yellow. I don't care whether Roeder States likes it or not. I'm just trying to describe it to our listeners.
True.
Let's go in.
The nose is muted.
It's a champagne nose. Yeah, a sparkling wine nose.
Maybe a slightly flinty.
Yeah. Yeah.
The red apple, I mean, it might be very, very muted, but I'm going to just drink it.
I think there's a touch of citrus there in the nose.
Oh.
I think there's a touch of grapefruit peeking through there.
I just drank it, folks. The red apple is prominent on the palate.
He rolled his eyes as soon as it hit his palate.
Mm. Oh. Oh, oh, oh. Mm. The red apple explodes on the front to mid palate. Wow.
Dare I say, the effervescence, mm-hmm. as I'm waffling, it's still bubbling on my tongue. Yes. Unbelievably. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Yeah, the red apple...
This is the real deal.
Oh, it is lovely. Now... If we were doing a French champagne proper, let's just say Dom Perignon. How is that different? First of all, comparing this and that is silly. But although review-wise, if you're doing pound for pound, it isn't. What you're going to get in your expensive French champagnes, or even your really good ones, very lean, very dry. But
drier.
Once again, more flint, more mineral, possibly some mushroom, possibly those type of notes. You're going to have... a different type of complexity. This, once again, though, still says I'm Californian.
Yeah, and if for no other reason, it's just not as dry as a champagne. There's just that hint of sweetness. Just a hint.
Well, an apple. That red apple, shiny red apple on the front.
It's beautiful.
It's not intended to be that way. It's just this is a bright, explosive, well, slightly rich front palate as champagne goes. Though I think the French would still appreciate this. It's still bone dry.
It's dry. It's mm-hmm. as dry a California as I've ever had.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tell you what, if this is their entry price.
This is their entry price.
How good is their Hermitage?
Funny you should ask, because someone at this table has had it before.
Well, who would that? I haven't had it. Rob, have you had it before?
I've had all of their stuff.
Tell our listeners about L'Hermitage.
It's wonderful. But champagne as a whole, I love champagne. It's just, you know, ever affording to drink it. Also, getting a good outlet for it. There's a lot of things to explain about champagne. One thing to start off with is, and we're talking about France, not California. This is a state, by the way, this particular one. It is grown and bottled. They grow the grapes, they bottle the grapes. On premises, allegedly. Okay. The thing is about champagne, they're not a state. Champagne are champagne houses. They source their grapes
right.
from elite growers.
Yep.
And the vineyards that they're growing it from or buying it from are elite. And then they make that from what they buy. Now, obviously, they're closely intertwined. They just don't own the vineyards. So,
are there any of the main champagne producers that do grow their own, or are they all champagne houses?
Not the ones you would know. There are estate champagnes, mm-hmm. and which, quite frankly, are exquisitely masterful.
Now, I mentioned this before. I don't know about on the air, but I got a 375 mil that I got from TJ's, and I saw it in Florida, but they still don't have it here. I went to Trader Joe's just to see if I could find it here.
Did you get that in your stocking in Christmas or something like
no,
that?
No, I got it, and Mom and I shared it for her condo warming
mm-hmm.
gift.
Mm-hmm.
Just had a nice glass, and it was wonderful, and it was an estate.
Let me explain something to you. And this is in a future episode. TJ's is full of shit.
I know.
And they don't follow any rules or laws. It's not a state. And it's probably grown in Lithuania.
This was not one of their products where it's made just for them. This is a product that's available other places.
Wow. Okay. But nevertheless, I put no faith in...
I understand.
I think they're one of the most dishonest wine cellars that there is. Oh, I'm not saying that they don't sell some things that are tasty. I'm just saying they're dishonest. But back to what I was saying. Many years ago, I was present at a estate champagne tasting. We did the whole lines. And it was in a classroom, for God's sakes. We were at school desks. I don't recall where it was. Somewhere in Columbus, but I don't know what. It was at some sort of classroom, although it was through a distributor.
Was it the St. Charles wine deal?
No. This is when I was, for instance, this was not open to the public. This is a private tasting. And that's the thing, folks. A lot of these elite tastings are not open to you, at least in this area. I'm sure there are some great tastings out in California, wherever you may live. And some more opportunities out there. But here, those type of things, those are limited to distributors and retailers and restaurateurs, not to the public. And this, the creme de la creme at that was Salon.
Oh.
And Salon was about $225. It was wonderful. I don't know what it is now, but Charles Krug, I've had their big time stuff. It's magnificent. I've never done Dom, never been real interested in doing it. Veuve, I've done all the Veuve stuff. Veuve Clicquot is a little bit more... mass appeal, their base stuff, and then their vintage stuff is very good. I've had their vintage stuff.
Yeah, the
vintage stuff
probably the best I've had.
It's really run of the mill. It's not that great. It's
but like, you can find it New Year's time. You can find it on sale and get it for a good price. And
well, they're selling for $60.
I paid $39.99.
Would you steal it?
Well, this maybe going back 10 years.
Okay, if 10 years ago it was. Now it's 60-some. Your best baseline champagne houses are Charles Heidsieck. That's one of the best, if you can find it. Bollinger. Then you get into like your Moët's, but do not get like the White Star. And we'll get to that in a second. Brut Imperial is very good. That's by Moët. Pierre Jouet is good. Tattinger can be good. Pommard can be good. Heidsieck Monopole is excellent. I had a vintage Brut Rosé that I had a couple bottles of once. Lovely. And we're talking like it was 10 years old. That's the beauty part. Great champagne. But your vintage stuff can age quite well, actually.
How long are we talking about aging?
Grand years of, say, Dom. Whenever.
20 years.
It can. The great ones. If you get a great bottle, say of, an elite, higher-end Bollinger Agnès, Grand Agnès. That stuff, you see old vintages of that all the time. Charles Heights, I forget what it was called, Grand Magnès or Milliès or something like that. Those higher-end stuff, those things can go forever. The L'Hermitage, 5-10 years, make it wonderful. Although they're already 7 years behind the ball on that. But yeah, there are collectors of Dom. There are collectors of Cristal. Now, except for the rap video crap, although that's kind of gone away. Forgetting all that, it's still an elite bottle. Salon, Charles Krug. It just goes on and on. There are legitimate collectors out there of champagne, just like there are collectors of Burgundy. One thing, though, in the French area, because California doesn't really follow this, you'll see extra dry, Brut, very Brut, all that kind of crap. Extra dry means sweeter. In France, there's Brut and Demi-Sec. Okay? Demi-Sec is sweeter. But there's also, I mean, like Moët, Brut Imperial is the driest. The next level down is White Star. It's not quite Demi-Sec, but it's slightly sweeter. And then I think it's Nectar Imperial is their Demi-Sec. So always look for that, folks. If you want something dry, look for the Demi-Sec. Don't get that. Because, not to say it won't be good, but if you're going to drink Demi-Sec, just drink frickin' Prosecco. Screw it.
Right. And
which isn't champagne.
But.
Or sparkler.
It's nice. I love Prosecco.
It's made with Muscat. Moscato.
I love Prosecco.
Okay.
So
all the 13-year-old girls out there would agree with you.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not a manly drink.
Neither is champagne.
And it's Champagne is butch.
It's not manly.
James Bond drinks it. That's manly. You know? And he drinks Bollinger Grand Marnier and Dom Pérignon.
He drinks martinis.
Yeah, but he drinks champagne.
Well.
That's true.
While you've been educating the listeners.
Yeah, so you
this has
board
been
them?
Changing a little bit.
It would.
It's now showing its minerality. Just there's a slight hint of minerality. I don't think it's the flint that was on the nose. It's starting to show a little bit.
Oh. Expressive. Slightly acidic.
It's really opened up nice.
Yeah. It's a glorious. This is the thing, folks. I'm sorry. I have to put it back in the refrigerator. The mini fridge underneath there. I don't have a champagne bucket. We're not that fluty. But this stuff is fun. It's fun to do occasionally. And we have some cheaper things lined up too, but this is fun.
It's not just fun. This is fucking good.
Well, there's also some really great French sparklers that are made in champagne. I remember for our wedding, when we come back from the break, I'll tell you what that is. I'll have to look at it in the wine vault because I just kept a couple bottles. It's not drinkable anymore. I just kept it because it was in our wedding. And it was Charles, it wasn't Charles Heidsieck, obviously, but it was another one. It was $12. It was wonderful. And then for my sister-in-law's wedding, I came across something called Jacques Aval. And it's a French Blanc de Blanc, which means, Blanc de Blanc means 100% Chardonnay. There's no Pinot in
okay.
it. Or Pinot Meunier. It's 100% Chardonnay. This thing was $10, $9.99. It was wonderful. And people raved over it. It was down in Kentucky was where the wedding is. I did that in Zonin Montepulciano di Abruzzo for $4.99 a bottle. It was just dry and Italian. It wasn't sweet at all. But this stuff, two cases of it, I bought one case back. We drank through it, though. It was that great. If I could find that, I would buy it regularly. Just to drink. The Jacques Aval. It's like kind of like what you're talking about when you're talking about that Trader Joe's knockoff stuff. This is more real, but it was really great.
You know, folks, I'm going to find that 375 ml and show it to the wine guy, and he's going to go, oh, this is really good.
Yeah. I remember one time I was at Barcelona and Argyle, you know, Oregon,
yeah, yeah.
They make a good sparkler.
Really?
Had that with some scallops. Lovely.
Hmm.
And when I was in Bodega Bay, Triple B and I, it was on New Year's Eve. And we were at it, the Bodega Bay, the inn at Bodega Bay, some resort right there. And they have one of the top restaurants rated in that area called The Duck or something like that. If you're out there, folks, you're probably like, oh, Rob, you don't know what you're talking about, but I, you know.
We could call Medicino Mendocino.
That's because you did that. But anyway, I, strangely enough, that night, I had a glass of, well, not a glass, I had a bottle, I think, by myself, of Chandon's Brut Rosé. I'm a sucker for a Brut Rosé. But, it was a crepe with crab meat topped with caviar.
Wait, what?
It was a crepe. Follow me. It was think of it as a crab enchilada, but it was a crepe. And then topped with, like, a white sauce with caviar. Champagne. Oh, yeah. That's Briny City, baby. That's what that was.
They obviously don't know about the rule. No cheese with seafood. But
I don't think it was a
It wasn't a cheese crepe.
No. No, it wasn't a cheese
crepe. Cream sauce. Cream.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a bechamel, but very light.
Sounds delicious.
Mm. It was bechamel. And a little caviar as a garnish on top. Beluga. It was good.
I'll bet.
I know. It was good.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Did you have that? No, you didn't. You've never been there. I'm sorry.
I probably wouldn't order the crab crepe.
I wouldn't either, but I did that night. So, folks, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, potpourri. Not really a potpourri tonight. We're going to more just talk a little bit about our experiences back in the past when we've used champagne for nefarious purposes. No. I remember after we got married, we had a ton left of it. Was, by the way, folks, my sparkler at my wedding was Charles Lafite. And it's a Brut Prestige, which is kind of like an entry-level French sparkler. But if you see Charles Lafite, buy it.
It's kind of like a TJ's fake champagne.
I didn't go to TJ's for that. It's just fake. TJ's fake. But I remember we had just a ton of it, just a glut of it. We were just going through it. And my buddy Adam and his girlfriend, who are expecting child, congratulations. They were over there. We were playing like board games or whatever, I think. And we drank, four bottles. By the way, folks, four bottles of champagne or sparklers, you get really drunk.
The question is, a lot of people say if you drink champagne, you're going to get hangover.
Oh, I got hungover.
On four bottles?
Oh, hell yeah. It's me. That wasn't the only thing we drank, too. Frozen margaritas were the first
thing.
Oh. I know. It was, yeah.
That's the thing, I think, for most people when they drink champagne and that whole, I'm going to get a hangover thing. Usually you're drinking something else on top of it.
Well.
You're mixing.
It's light and it's tasty and you don't think, I need to drink water. That's the other thing.
There's that.
You always drink water. I mean, here on the Wine Vault, we drink, what, 2-3 bottles of water during the show?
Yeah.
I do. You don't.
I don't.
Well, you're drunk.
This is the bottle from a month ago.
You just sip it. I drink at least a bottle or two of water. That's me.
Well.
First of all, it cleanses the palate. Let's move on. But yeah, and what are some things you can do with champagne, I guess? It's not just for toasting. That's the other thing. Champagne pairs well with food.
It really does.
Not steak, mind you, but seafood. Think of it as a different choice. Now, I'm not talking about an oily fish like sea bass or whatever. Not salmon. No. But crisper things, especially shellfish. That's an excellent pairing with that.
Well,
oysters.
Even if it truly doesn't cleanse the palate, there's kind of that perception that this is going to cleanse, champagne's going to cleanse your palate.
Mm-hmm. But champagne or sparkling wine, champagne. With oysters.
Ooh, son.
Or, I mean, just think about that. Shucked oysters. And you're looking out at the Pacific Ocean.
Well.
You're on a...
Atlantic.
We're on the Pacific right now.
You're on the Pacific.
Because
oysters in the Pacific?
I don't know. Is that not good on the Pacific? Do oysters there. Well, I don't know. What do they do?
Oysters of the bay. Anyhow.
Okay, you're eating whatever they have locally that's fresh. Dickhead. I mean, they could have oysters there. I don't know. Is that where they have them?
Flown in.
I don't want that. But why they floated this in then? I wanted to. You're drinking the wine in the region it's from.
Okay.
And the Pacific Ocean's prettier than the Atlantic. But still, at least the coastline is. I mean, I don't know about swimming in it, but it's prettier. Yeah. I don't know if I can swim in it. That shit's cold, okay? But, real cold. But, you're sitting there. Anyway, until you interrupted me. And there's actually quite a few spots down through there on the Pacific where you can buy a bottle of wine, sit there, have light appetizers, light snacks, and just look at the ocean or experience the area.
Clams. Let's have clams. With our champagne.
Razor clams? What kind of clams?
Whatever the local clams are.
Okay. And you can sit there and just enjoy your bottle while you watch the sea foam spray up. It's wonderful.
You said sea foam spray.
I did. And that's a lovely experience. I mean, that's the thing. Think of it. Now, I've never actually drank this wine in those experiences, but I imagine it'd be very nice if I was ever able to because Becky was pregnant on that trip and we couldn't necessarily share a bottle together without, judging stares. But still,
Well,
But I could drink it by myself, but I'd be drunk. I did get drunk, though, on that trip quite a bit.
Of course you did.
In the morning.
The listeners...
Well, yeah, I did, because I texted you.
Oh, my Lord.
I texted you that I'm drunk at 11... What was it, like 10:30, 11 in the morning? And I was in some Mexican restaurant, by the way. Excellent food.
That was our time. That was Eastern Standard Time. It was 11 o'clock and you were drunk, which would have been 8 o'clock California time.
No, it was 8 o'clock. It was 11 o'clock there. It would have been like 2 or 3 here. Still not, you know. And I was somewhere, I think it was Geyserville, perhaps, where we were at. Drinking. Well, not drinking. I was eating at that point. But a lot of great restaurants there.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
You've never been.
I've never been, but I know that.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful area. But that's kind of got on a sidetrack. But food pairings with this, aside from clams or oysters, where would you go? Obviously, I did a crepe.
I mean, you can go light. You can go salads, like a nice salad.
Arugula. I just had arugula tonight.
Just a beautiful salad, I would think, with, you know, some nice crumble blue cheese in there.
Oh, that'd be good. Gorgonzola.
You know, maybe slices of ham. I don't know.
But some goat cheese.
Goat cheese. Ooh, son.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I would like with this in my salad. Bacon.
A little fatty edge?
Just a little fatty edge.
A little pancetta.
Capicola. Charcuterie.
Yeah. Oh, charcuterie. Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, son, that charcuterie plate we had at the Sycamore. Mm.
Yeah. What do you think you had at the Sycamore? I know.
I don't think this could hold up to the beef cheeks.
No. This wouldn't be a beef cheek worthy, but... I know. Folks, we just can't stop drinking this. By the way, this bottle will be drank.
It's beautiful. And it just... It's interactive.
What is
the effervescence?
It's fun to
watch.
When
you put it on your tongue, the popping in your mouth. It's almost like freaking Pop Rocks.
Yeah, that being said,
is as effervescent a sparkler / champagne I've ever had.
Oh, yes. This is very, very active. And one thing you want bigger bubbles and it to be very active, just like this. This is just the most... It looks like fireworks in the glass as it sits there and bubbles up. And that's what you want. You don't want these little, tiny little bubbles that...
Tiny bubbles.
That fizz out that you might see in a cheap cava. You don't want that.
I'm looking across the studio here at Wine Guy's glass, and there's a volcano going off. There's an eruption in his glass.
That's right. I like a studio.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But... my first proper experience with champagne,
mm-hmm.
and it was Brutus at my cousin's wedding, and talked about this experience before, but B, Don, who was a boyfriend of my aunt at the time, tipped the bartender $100 to move the table. It was put these portable bars, and he moved it next to our table, and he ordered up the infamous liqueur to add to the
Chambord.
Chambord with the champagne.
You do so, well, cheaper stuff.
Just a touch. Just the cheaper stuff, for sure.
Well, cheaper stuff, that's fine. I mean, mimosas are fun. Cheaper stuff. That's what cheap cava's for.
Exactly.
Now, I mean, I have no problem with a mimosa or, you know, when you put Chambord in it. That's what you... Some of those things aren't really all that palatable unless you do that. Uh-oh.
What I need.
The boss is in the room, folks. Triple B is in the room.
Friend?
I know what she's angry about.
He's just a friend. Oh, baby.
It doesn't matter. You can't talk about that on the air, folks. I'm keeping... Yeah.
You're not going to go off air, so
no.
I can talk about it.
No, you don't need to.
You could talk about it.
Say she's just a friend. What? No, don't talk about it.
You got what I need.
No.
Pause it whenever.
Okay. Well, folks, we're going to take a break anyway. So the Triple B can rant about something that doesn't make a difference. And we'll be right back on the Wine Vault. Hey everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault?
I know the Unlicensed does.
Well, that's great. Do you know how you can get that done? Do you know the one way the world can find out about the Wine Vault?
What way is that, Rob?
Giving us a review on iTunes. So, take the time. Give us that 5-star or whatever. Let us know. Let the world know that you love the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So Scott is telling me about how he's broken into his old jeans because he's lost so much weight. So if you see Scott out on the highway, you'll notice, or anywhere, you'll notice that he's wearing Jordache. That's because it's from
Bugle Boy.
That too. And you'll notice that because he hasn't weighed this since 1993. And so he's wearing clothes from 1993.
False.
So we're gonna. You probably have a Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl shirt that you're gonna start wearing too, right?
Wait, Mr. Bengals fan. First of all, it's well documented Steelers fan here.
No.
And I didn't have to break things out of storage like you, who still wears members only jackets.
I don't have a members only jacket.
Yeah, you all have this because you only wear the knockoff members only.
I don't
jacket.
Have any jacket of that nature.
Oh my!
I wear North Face. Is that what you mean?
Oh.
That's modern. What do you wear?
Modern.
You have your hat around
face with me tonight.
Do you?
I do.
Off air, I have an
Let's get back to the wine.
Off air, I have an interesting story to tell you.
So. Oh, really?
Let's say it on there. No.
No.
The wine. So we're going to start off with the unlicensed taxi driver for the Roto-Rooter State non-vintage Brut.
I'm just going to go straight to it. This is a 90 for me. Mm-hmm. All day long. Could it be scored higher? I don't have a lot of experience with sparklers or champagne in general. This is really fucking good. It deserves a number that starts with a 9. So I'm going 90. If that's underscored, so be it. We called it a slightly muted nose. For me, there was a hint of citrus, a hint of slate there. What separates this from any other sparkler that I've had, this gorgeous effervescence. Mm-hmm. It's so much that Rob described it as frothing. It's almost like the head of a light beer.
It's starting to dissipate now, but that's been...
How long has this pour been in our glasses?
Yeah, I know, quite a while.
Red apple on the front, and it's perfect. In Ohio, we get a lot of red delicious apples.
Yes,
and there's just a subtle sweetness to them. This is a dry wine, as Rob said, but the red apple brings a subtle sweetness that, for me, is characteristic of the California style. What was wonderful about this, it wasn't a one-note pony in that as it opened, there's a slight minerality expression that was just wonderful, but I'm a sucker for that mouthfeel, and this effervescence, the bubbliness on your tongue was like pop rocks going off.
Oh yeah,
it was spectacular. Mm-hmm. I'm giving it a 90.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Hall of Fame?
I think that would depend.
I'm open-minded. I'm open-minded about its status.
No one's ever called you open-minded before.
That's 100%.
So it's on to me, folks. Scott gave it a 90. And I agree with virtually all the points he made because I think he's correct. Where does it score, though? And I think 92 might be a little bit optimistic. But I think a 90 is correct. I agree with a 90. And I also think it is warrants Hall of Fame.
It does. As you'd like to say, it's on the lower shelf of the Hall of Fame, but
true.
One thing I love about this, we talk about drinkability all the time, and there are some of our listeners who they're meh about champagne, you know, because all they've ever had is bad experiences or sweet shit. This is a drinkable dry champagne that's fucking fantastic. You know, the just bubbles, and I love it. And I think our listeners will love it.
Absolutely. I agree with that. My favorite bit about it, though, like you said, that red apple that just waves into the mineral. But I always enjoy when a wine has elements that are clearly definable. And that is something, and that's a trait that I enjoy.
We've had green apple, and mm-hmm. I'm sure the apple in this comes from the Chardonnay, right?
Oh yeah, it would be.
But mm-hmm. red apple? Have we had distinctly? Mm-hmm. We've had wines that have talked about it. But yeah. This is red delicious apple in a bottle.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big reason why definable characteristics are always wonderful.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. granted,
unless those definable characteristics are rubber or predator or 19 crimes. But oh, wait a second. Wait a minute. We're not too far from Anderson Valley. We have a guy here named Anderson. And, you know, we have a sparkler coming out. It's called, hey, brother, what's it called?
Let me light that sparkler up for you. My foot! Oh, god damn it, son. You did it again to me. You'll get me every time.
Anyway, I guess we got the idea wrong. You mean it's bubbly? Oh, hold on a second. I've got a straw here. We have some Chardonnay, and it's our finest Chardonnay from, where's a good spot to say that we make Chardonnay? Yeah, I just take the bubbles.
Well, we're not really from Anderson Valley. Watched Anderson Cooper on the CNN.
We
so
did.
Like Anderson Valley.
Did you know that if you put Sprite in Chardonnay, it looks the same? Anyway, folks, 290s, a Hall of Fame Rotary Estate Brut, bravo. And you don't need a tip
of the cap.
Rotary doesn't need a tip of the cap.
No, they don't. Not from us.
Because they have the cap.
But we're going to give them the tip of the cap anyway.
That's right.
We'll tip their cap.
That could be dirty.
Not so much. Yes. It is dirty.
Yes. And we look forward to...
Steve's not here and I'm being dirty.
Well, you just...
damn it.
I know. But we look forward to drinking other examples of their fine wines here on the Wine Vault. So, or...
for sure.
Or possibly in private and then talking about them on the air later.
I'll tell you what, man. I cannot wait to buy a bottle of L'Hermitage.
Yeah, L'Hermitage. Yes. So, folks... for Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver, and Rob, the wine guy,
ciao, folks.
We're going to bid you adieu. And see you next time on the Wine Vault. Good night.